Hi, this is Laura Maisie, and you're listening to the Breath in the Early Show.
Breathney, you come all the way from Ireland for this adventure.
Isn't Breathney Early a real tonic, full of positivity?
It's an amazing story, Breathney, with a wonderful, happy ending.
All of those things on your bucket list wouldn't necessarily have led you to do the World Cycle Race.
27 countries, 490 days. 18,000 miles on a bike.
You've decided that's it. You're going to keep giving yourself challenges.
Welcome to the Breathney Early Show. This week we have another amazing guest for you who's going to talk to us all about the world of endurance running, long distance running, cross country running, literally cross countries, not just what you would associate down the local park. But first, I want to tell you about an event that's happening in September that I'm absolutely delighted to be hosting. It's called Cloud Nine. It's a conference for inspiring and motivating you, anybody who's listening to this podcast. It's in Carrick and Shannon, County Leitrim, where I'm from, and I'm delighted to be hosting 99 amazing people for a 3-day conference. You can check it all out. It's on my website at breathneyearly.com/cloud9, and you absolutely need to be there. It's already halfway sold out. As I said, 99 tickets, €99, 9 inspirational speakers, and it's on the 9th of the 9th, hence the name Cloud 9. And I promise you, by the end of the weekend, you will be literally on Cloud 9. Whatever your goals are, personal, financial, professional, it's going to give you that little bit of a kick in the rear that you need to achieve whatever your goals are. It's all top secret. I'm not telling you who the guests are, who the speakers are, but I guarantee you they are super impressive and super awesome, and you will be so happy you came along. Check it out. Get in touch if you want, have any questions. Already nearly 50 of the tickets are gone, so there's about 52 or 53 tickets left. Make sure you don't miss out. But getting back to the purpose of today's show, I am delighted to welcome Laura Maisie to the program. Laura, welcome.
Thank you.
I came across your story online a couple of weeks ago now at this point, and I just knew I had to get in touch, so I reached out and asked you to come on the show because I think your message is so important and so impressive. I must apologize about my voice because it's the morning after the Ireland-Italy game last night. I'm a little bit hoarse, I'm a little bit tired, and so we're going to have to try and, you're going to have to be gentle with me on this one.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much. But unfortunately, by the time that you listen to this, which will be next Wednesday, we'll already have played France. Hopefully, we'll still be in the competition. I want to talk about you, and I want to talk specifically about your project, Running Home from Rome. But before we even get thinking about that epic journey, because home for you is London, right?
Yes, yeah.
So you're going to run from Rome to London later this year, which is pretty awesome. But first of all, let's rewind, because when we first connected, the first thing you said to me was, I'm not really an athlete. So why would someone who doesn't identify as an athlete want to run home from Rome? So tell me where that all came from.
It's not really, I mean, I don't kind of really view it as an athletic feat, really. It's more kind of one of those things where you're like, I wonder if I can do this. Because I don't come from an athletic background, I wasn't really sporty as a child, didn't really kind of, you know, move more than I needed to, really. My whole life, I think that's generally been my theory. If I don't need to move very much, I won't. And I just kind of had sort of the right friends, really, and someone... So Danny Bent, who set up this thing called Project Awesome, I happened to be having a coffee with him, and he said, "Oh, I've started this thing where we like run around at 6:30 in the morning," and I was like, "Yeah, no, thanks." He's like, "Oh, you should come; it's brilliant." And I was like, "Yeah, brilliant for people like you who are athletic and love waking up at that time, but I'm me and I like the sofa, so I'm going to go with no, but thanks for the offer." And he just was persistent, and he's a very nice person to be around. He's very infectious. He's like, "There's no reason why you can't come." And I'm like, "Well, I'm not athletic." And he's like, "Yeah, and?" And like most of the people would be like, "Oh, right, I see where you're coming from. Like, yeah, okay, it's not your thing. Like running, you're not going to enjoy it because it's not what you do." And he's like, "Why not? You can run around for a bit. It'd be great to see you." So I was like, So for some absurd reason, I actually did get up and go. And I think when I talk to people about it, and I'm kind of pitching around for reasons, because people always want to know why you did it, because many people are presented with the same opportunity and wouldn't do it. And I don't really know, but I was having kind of a lot of job difficulty at the time. And I guess I kind of maybe felt like it was something that I could have control over, when there was a lot of other things that I didn't have control over. I came of a really horrible situation in which I'd kind of put my heart and soul into a job position and really thought that that was kind of being rewarded and appreciated. And it really kind of wasn't. And in a rather unceremonious fashion, I was kind of sacked. And it really kind of knocked me for six. And I think I'd just kind of like gone back into a little ball and didn't really know what to do. And I had, you know, I got two other part-time jobs, and neither of which I was kind of thinking was anything that I really wanted to make into a career. I just was kind of doing it because, you know, you need to pay rent and things. And I was just a little bit kind of lost, I guess. And this was something that I could kind of latch onto and have some element of control of. Like, I had chosen to get up, I had chosen to be out at this ridiculous time at 6:30 when no one else was, and run around even though I wasn't a runner. And I had made that conscious choice instead of having decisions made for me, where I no longer was doing a job that I had really, you know, enjoyed and been passionate about. And I guess that was something to do with it. But, I don't know if it was. I just try to find reasons because people want answers. They say, why did you start running? And I don't really know.
Because 6:30 in the morning to me is pretty sacred. And usually the only way I see 6:30 is from the night before.
Exactly. And the thing is, you have to be there at 6:30. And it's in central London. So it's not like, oh, the alarm's going off at 6:30. The alarm goes off at 4:45. So yesterday I went, the alarm went off at 4:45. And I got the train at 5:17. I got into London for 5:46. I run over from where the train lands to where the workout is. It took me till about 6:10. I work out with them until 7:15. We all go for coffee afterwards and a bit of breakfast. I was in work for 9. I worked from 9 until 7. And then I biked halfway home and then I ran the remaining journey. So I got home at about 8:15. So that was my day yesterday. My alarm had gone off at 4:45, and that's not a thing that people would willingly want to take on.
What are they feeding you at these Project Awesome sessions? Because like, to me, that just sounds horrific.
Yeah, it does sound horrific. And I get home and I feel awesome. I'm like off my face with awesomeness, and it doesn't make any sense. And I'm hyped and I'm energetic and I'm not ruined. I get ruined at some point in the afternoon after I've eaten, because my body is all like, well, you know, we're digesting now. We can't also be awake. It does something to your day. It really does do something to your day. So I would have these horrible job situations. I kind of pitched in and out of about 7 jobs between October and December of the year before last, which is when I started going to Project Awesome. And I just made a rule with myself. Like, I wasn't going to let people talk down to me anymore. Not let them, do you know what I mean? I didn't punch them or anything, but I just thought, for my self-respect, I need to not stay in jobs where people talk down to me. So as soon as I saw where previously I'd be like, oh, just, you know, go on, because I was always doing jobs on the side of being at uni, so my job was just my other thing and my uni was my main thing. And then when I finished uni, I was like, well, my job is my main thing. If people talk down to me at work and I let that continue, that will become my life. I'll be one of those people who's talked down to, and I just go, oh, okay, then whatever. So I would just leave. As soon as someone spoke rudely to me, I would just leave. And so, as I say, I got through 7 jobs in 3 months. That was so disheartening. I was like, is there really going to be no workplace where I don't find a manager who talks down to me? So I'd go to these horrible jobs. But if I'd started my day with Project Awesome, I'd be like, everything is, it just does something. It does something to your day.
It's like the Lego movie, Everything Is Awesome.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly the song for Project Awesome. But you, if you start your day with Project Awesome and then you go off to your work and then someone talks down to you, whatever, I'd just be like, do you know what? That's your bag. You're obviously not a happy person. I don't need to stay here anymore. That's fine. I'm not going to internalize your negativity, because whatever your problem is, or you didn't sleep enough or whatever, that's your problem. It's not my problem. And because I've started my day with Project Awesome, I can kind of look at things in a little bit more, I don't know, I guess like a light-hearted way. I sort of was like not so dreary and taking everything so seriously. And I wasn't so annoyed by everything, annoyed by the world. And why have I been dealt this hand? And why don't I seem to be able to use my degrees to get a decent job? And why do I have to make coffee even though I've got a law degree and all the rest of it? That just kind of fades, and it's like, do you know what, it doesn't matter, just chill your bones. You've had a run this morning, you've seen people who you really, really enjoy their company, you've been in a massive group hug that consisted of over 100 people. Like, today is awesome. It doesn't matter what actually happens, just you can't not feel awesome if you start your day that way.
How many days a week are we talking about doing this?
They do it 3 days a week, but when I first started, it was just running 2 days a week, so Wednesdays and Fridays, and I would go religiously to both. And then they started Monday when the Wednesday and Friday groups got bigger. And it depends. The Monday is somewhere different each time. So sometimes they're the other side of London. I just can't make it unless I leave the house at 3 a.m. or something. So I just don't do those ones. But then if they're on this side of town, I'll go. So yeah, I generally go Wednesdays and or Fridays, depending on what my work pattern is. And then Mondays if they're close by.
Okay, so getting out of bed ridiculously early, exercising, feeling really, really good. That doesn't necessarily lead you to a point where you say, oh, let me get in Rome and I'll run home.
No, exactly. But what happens is, so in Project Awesome, it's not an actual divide. I mean, we're not sitting on opposite sides of the cafe where we have coffee, but there's two kind of types of people in Project Awesome. There's the people who go adventuring and they do the things that you only dream of, and they have these amazing adventures and lives, and they just say, do you know what? I feel like cycling from London to India, I'm going to do it. I feel like cycling from Scotland to Iran, I'm going to do it. And they do it. And then there's everybody else who's like, I wish I could be like them. And I just was like, do you know what? I've been in this group for long enough, the I wish I could be like them group. I'm going to fucking join that group. I'm going to join the group. So I was like, I'm going to do something. I want to do this. I want to say, you know, I've traveled under my own steam, under my own, the strength of my human legs has taken me across a proportion of the world. You know, I think someone worked it out to 5% of the world's surface will be covered when I do my run later this year. But yeah, you're around, I think if you took a group of any given morning at Project Awesome, the percentage of people who you could class as adventurers or who have done adventures or whatever is disproportionately higher than in any other group that you'd have.
Yeah.
So you're exposed, well, most people, constantly.
Yeah, well, most groups don't have those type of people in them at all, never mind a multitude, because it's not the first time I've come across Project Awesome. I'm very familiar with some of the names of the people that you're probably talking about, the likes of Anna McNuff, who ran the length of New Zealand, and I followed her because I had just done the whole New Zealand thing a couple of months before she finished. Yeah. And Susie Pike, course, I know, cycled across Australia. Dave Cornwith, I'm familiar with as well. Leon McCarron, I think, pops in from time to time.
Yeah.
Alistair Humphreys. There's people who jump around in that kind of crew in London that I've kind of watched them at an arm's length and interacted with a few of them on social media or whatever. But it's a fantastic group of people. And I suppose, yeah, I think if I was hanging out with those people as well, I'd probably be drawn to do a lot more stuff.
Yeah, because also when you go for a coffee with someone or when you work out with someone, even if the things they've previously done in their life are not comparable to yours, like they're way more active than you and always have been or whatever, you sit down and have a coffee with someone, it normalizes them to an extent. So like, the thing I really love about Anna McNuff is that she's just so irreverent. Like when you talk to her, she was saying about the photo shoot she did with Women's Health magazine. So they did a little kind of interview thing with her and whatever. And she was talking about their leggings, and she said that she, because she didn't want to wear pants, because she didn't want to get a visible, you know, visible knicker line in the photos in the magazine, she didn't have pants on, she just had their leggings on. And when she gave the leggings back to the bloke afterwards, she said, sorry, I've badged all over your leggings. And I just, like you're so, like, normal and ordinary. She doesn't always talk about sports. She's not, you know, it's not like, oh, and I did this time, and I did that time, and I'm running a 7-minute mile or whatever. She's just, she's very approachable. I think that's the thing, actually, I find with the adventuring crowd, is that you expect them to be kind of superhuman and not really able to maybe connect with people with ordinary 9-to-5 jobs and all the rest of it. Like, oh, we're too ordinary. They, you know, they must be talking about the time they fought off a lion single-handedly or something. And they're just very approachable, very normal. They like a latte. They want to sit down. Their legs are hurt and they've cut their hand, whatever. They're just, you know, you can just go and talk to them. And then I was like, wait a minute, well, I'm normalish in that kind of way. Yes, I'm not a runner, but I could be a runner. You know, at some point, everyone began the thing that they then did. So, like, though I think Anna probably went full runs, she wasn't in the category where she'd say she was a runner. And she read...
No, but Anna specifically now is probably not the best example, because obviously an international athlete of some acclaim... I think, and I could be correct on this, but I'm pretty sure there was some success either at World University Games or at Commonwealth game level. Like there was definitely like high level elite athlete blood in her.
I think probably Susie Pike is, in terms of like normalness to suddenly doing something that was out of the blue is our best example, because I don't think she had owned a bike before she bought Dougal in Australia, did she? The bike's called Dougal.
No, I don't think so. Like, I spoke to Susie before she did her cycle. She heard of me through a mutual acquaintance and was repeating the same route as me, and he had said to her, oh, you know, you should have a chat with, it was Nick Tracy was his name, you should have a chat with Susie or with Breffni. So she contacted me and we had a chat over Skype. She had really little to no adventure experience at all. And yet, I suppose it took her a bit longer than she planned. She spent more time and probably more money than she would have liked to have done. But I think if you asked her now, she would be delighted. She wouldn't change a thing about what she did. So you decided you want to join the other half of the table, effectively, the people who do things rather than look up to the people who do things.
Yeah.
Why Rome? Why not Madrid? Why not Paris? Why not Brussels? What was special about Rome?
Well, I mean, I love everything about Italy. I'm very much, in terms of history, I work for English Heritage, so I work in historic surroundings, and I have previously worked for National Trust, so kind of history is one of the things I'm fascinated by. My favourite period in history is the Renaissance, so obviously Italian Renaissance stuff appeals to me. So if ever I've got time to go somewhere abroad, and I've got a decent amount of time, I usually will go to Italy. So it was kind of logical, but previous to going to Project Awesome or anything, it had kind of brewed in my mind this route. I was just interested by the route because I'd read a book called, I can't remember what it's called, but it's by a guy called Andrew Sykes, and he's got a bike called Reggie, and he does these, he's a teacher, and on his summer holidays or whatever, he does really long distance bike journeys and writes about them. And one of them was called Along the Med on a Bike Called Reggie, but I don't think it was that one that I read. I think it was the one previous to that. And he does the route, which technically it goes from Canterbury and finishes in Rome, and it's called the Via Francigena. I think that's how you pronounce it. And so he had written about following this route, and I'd just been interested because he talks about going through Tuscany, he describes it, and obviously it's just beautiful and sounds lovely. So I'd just been kind of intrigued by this route, and I'm also intrigued by things that people don't do very often, the kind of lesser well-trod roads, because I think a lot of people are, because you would like the idea that you could discover something that no one else has discovered, or you want to do something unusual, because I think we're inclined to want praise as humans. If you do something unusual, you might get praise. So I was intrigued by it because it wasn't that well known, and it goes through, you know, you do Italy the slow way, and it's just like a dream come true, because I'm only ever doing Italy 4 or 5 days at a time because I'm on holiday from work or something. So I thought that would be amazing to just spend weeks and weeks on end just going through Italy. So that was prize Project Awesome. I'd had the name of this route and this idea in my mind that I would like to kind of go and walk a bit of it or look at it or whatever. And I was doing Project Awesome, and I was having a little sweaty heart attack every time I went, and I was getting a bit embarrassed because I was in front of these people who weren't having sweaty heart attacks. So I started running myself in my spare time so that when I got to Project Awesome, I could look cool and calm and collected like the other people.
Cheating in some respects, but not really. It's actually, yeah, it starts off as cheating and to look a bit more awesome than you actually are in your own head. But then when you actually start developing, you realize, oh, hang on a minute, I am just as capable as the other people.
Yeah, there was just something about plodding along. So even though I was doing it in a really undignified way, like I had shoes on that didn't fit that I found in the back of a cupboard somewhere because, you know, why would I ever have running shoes? So I just found them somewhere. I don't know whose they were. I don't think I'd ever bought them. So someone had bought running shoes and then buried them. I found them, put them on. And I didn't have running clothes. So I was just wearing like t-shirts, obviously massive sweater shoes going on, very visible. And leggings. It was just the kind of leggings that you'd wear like under a skirt or something. They're only made as a thin thing to go under a skirt or something. So I was putting on these leggings, and I now realised that every time my leg was like stretching forward so that I could run, they go thinner, they stretch thinner. Everyone can see your pants.
They go see through. Yeah.
So I was showing the neighbourhood my pants, and sweating all over the place, and really unsuitable shoes. And I just plodded around doing that for a while. And although I was kind of sweaty and it was uncomfortable, there was something kind of underneath it all going on where my body was kind of like, yes, this is what we do. This is what, this as humans, before there was, you know, fancy brick houses that keep us insulated, and before TVs and phones and stuff, you just have your body. That's what you use to survive. You travel that way. You hunt your food that way. Whatever you do, all you're equipped with is your human body. And something about it just kind of tapped into my subconscious, and I was like, there's something weirdly therapeutic about it. Although I really genuinely feel like I'm on the verge of a heart attack, and I'm panting so hard I've got a sore throat. I was really like, and it was, and I would just like stop a walk at the slightest anything. So my 20 minute run, I'd say to people, oh, I ran for 20 minutes. What I meant was I ran for about kind of 10, and then I would like walk for long stretches in between. Like, well, 20 minutes is ridiculous. People can't really run for a whole 20 minutes. It's ridiculous. They must mean they run and walk. That must be what they mean when people talk about running. So something weird kind of happened, and it kind of felt like something that I was kind of capable of, even though at that moment in time I was struggling, it was difficult for me. It felt like it wasn't really alien. It wasn't like, oh, well, I need a lot of skill to do this. Like, I don't know, rowing, I'd be lost with rowing. You do have to have some skill, otherwise you go in a circle. Or, you know, stand up paddleboard, you need the board, you need to not fall in and stuff. There's a little bit more going on with running. It's just like, put your feet forward. You know how to walk, so you know how to run. It's more difficult, but if you just keep doing it, it will become less difficult.
Yeah, you make it sound way easier than I find it as well.
But the thing is, I've never been a runner that pushes myself. So if ever I talk to people who are really new to running, I say, listen, go out the front door and run until it's not comfortable anymore, and stop exactly where you are and just go back home. And the next day, go again. And, you know, go every second day or every third day. And the point at which you have to stop and turn around and go back home will be later. And I'm not, you know, some people are like, oh, just, you know, smashed it on the treadmill at the gym for 10 minutes straight, really, really fast, and my legs felt really wobbly, but, you know, I'll do it again next time. I was never that type of runner. I'm a plodder, I'm slow. If I'm not enjoying myself while I'm running anymore, I will just stop. I'll just walk.
When are we flying to Rome? When are you going to be starting the epic journey?
September 12th. For the sole reason, it's a Monday, and I feel like Mondays are good days for starting things. So, yeah, it was either the 5th or the 12th, but I've got a 10-year reunion with some friends that I went to uni with on from the 2nd to the 4th. So I've got this little reunion weekend, another week back in work, earning the last little scraps of money so that I can maybe eat on my run. And then I'll probably fly out the 9th or the 10th, depending on flights and stuff, because it goes over a weekend, the flights are obviously more expensive. And because I'm obviously trying to trim costs wherever possible. So potentially I'll fly out the Friday before, spend a weekend out there just going, oh, I'm in Rome and it's beautiful, and then start on the Monday.
Yeah, it sounds absolutely epic. And the start point is at the start of that way, is it?
Yeah, so basically I'm starting at the end, and I'm going to run it as it tells me to, all the way back to Canterbury, and then I'll make my own way from Canterbury to London, which is kind of half of the stretch I did on a run that I did this time last year. I did a 90-mile run from London out to Walmer on the coast, and that passed through Canterbury. So I'm familiar-ish with the way that I'll get from Canterbury back to London. So that's it. So I'm doing it backwards, which is a little bit wacky. I'm also running it, whereas, you know, the majority of people, there's only about, I guess, between kind of 25 and 50 people doing it a year anyway. A few people, maybe 3 or 4. I mean, don't quote me on these figures, but I've kind of sort of tried to get an idea, but it's hard to track these things because it's a lot more informal route doing it backwards, and not everyone records it. They just do it for their own reasons, but it's about 3 or 4 people do it backwards each year, and, you know, maybe one a year is running it, maybe less.
Yeah, because when I set off to do the World Cycle Race, I contacted almost everybody who had done the race previously, and that figure at the time was 9 people who I could find who had actually completed it ever.
Yeah.
And I reached out to all of them I could find contact details for, and spoke to probably half of them, either in person on Skype or over social media, and basically sucked their brains for inspiration and for knowledge and for suggestions and advice, which actually turned out to probably be the most valuable thing I did of the research and all the preparation I did. Almost as valuable as all the hours in the gym and all the hours in the saddle was actually speaking to people who've done it before and realizing, the same way as you did with the Project Awesome crew, that these things are manageable and these people are just human, same as everybody else. They've still got to go to the bathroom to pee a couple of times a day, you know, so they're not superhuman, they're not super men or super women. They're just average people doing pretty extraordinary things.
Yeah. Big time.
So I'm interested to think about what's going on with this in your head. Are you scared, excited, enthused? Where are you on that spectrum?
Very excited. I can't wait to just be like, you know, I'm unusual in that I have a job that I really enjoy and I have colleagues that I really get on with and I have a really great manager and I, you know, I live this really quite nice life. I I've got Project Awesome, I've got fantastic friends, I've got a nice job. I run whenever I want to. There's nothing about my life that I think, God, I can't wait to escape that. It's not an escape thing, but also there's a little bit of me that's like, oh, I can't wait to ditch this all and just be out on the road, backpack on my back. I can pitch down whenever I like. I've got my tent and just like there's Tuscany right in front of me. Like, oh, look, I'm just running on the road to Florence. Like, I just can't wait to get out and be like, where am I going to go today? Like, I know where I'm going to go, plan my route. I mean, it sounded all spontaneous then. But, you know, in a way, it's sort of like it's just you versus the world. Like, what is going to happen? I'm definitely intrigued to see what's going to happen because it's a mental challenge. These things always are mental challenges because if you're going to do something for 2.5 or 3 months, it's not like, oh, have you trained enough? Like, you can't train enough for something like this. You just can't. And the first kind of 2 or 3, like if someone did what I'm going to do with absolutely no running background at all, put the bag on their back, by about 2 or 3 weeks in, they'd be into it. They'd be doing lower mileage a day. They'd be going slower a day potentially. But they'd be on the road, they'd be doing it, they'd be able to run from Rome to London. Anyone could if they could just get themselves 2.5 or 3 months off work. They weren't intimidated by the prospect of doing that. Physically, anyone could. But mentally, it's a whole different thing. These long-distance challenges always are mental. And I'm excited. I don't know what's going to happen to me. I don't know what type of person I will become when I'm faced with like massive adversity or I'm totally lost or I become injured and there's no one around me. Like, Or I'm just like, God, I just haven't seen anyone in ages. I really want my friends around me. Like, there's people I really miss. I'm just like, what is going to happen? What's going to happen when I wake up in the morning? I think, I really, really don't want to run today. I really hate running today. What am I going to do? Am I still going to run? Or am I just going to have a little strop and sit at the side of the road and be like, I'm not bloody running today?
Yeah, what's going to happen? Those days are quite interesting when you really don't want to do anything. You barely want to get out of wherever it is you found yourself sleeping the previous night.
Yeah.
How long are you expecting this to take?
So my average, obviously it varies depending on the distance between towns and it depends how kind of desolate the bits are and it depends whether there's going to be snow in the Alps and stuff. But I'm going to average about 23 miles a day and that means if I just ran every day, there'll be 59 days of running start to finish. I'm obviously not going to run every day. There's going to be stuff I don't expect. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be rest days where I'm in a place where I'm like, this is lovely. I really want to take another day to appreciate this. I'm also going to divert off route from where the Via Francigena would go. I'm going to kind of divert and go to Florence because it's the route kind of goes alongside to the left of Florence and it would take about an extra day or two of running. So it's quite a diversion out of the way. But I thought, what's the point of Tuscany if I don't go to Florence?
I do think as well, I think I love your attitude towards the whole challenge, that you're not sticking rigidly to the rules, that there's certain things you want to do and things you want to see and places you want to go to. Yeah. And I think it's so important to do that because I stopped to smell the roses everywhere when I was on the road. And I remember those moments as fondly as I do the hours in the saddle, you know, and that's what you'll remember when in 5 years time, in 10 years time, is those detours. They actually make the journey. So kudos to you for doing that. Now, you mentioned the Alps, which brings me nicely to my next question, because my question was going to be, are you going over the Alps or under the Alps or around the Alps? But you've kind of answered it when you start talking about snow because...
Over.
Yeah. So what kind of heights are we talking?
So the Great St. Bernard Pass, which I'm going to use, which is the one that Napoleon used... Figure if it's good enough for him, good enough for me. It's about 2,000 feet. Does that sound right? If I remembered my reading properly?
No, I would say it's 2,000 meters.
2,000 meters, yeah, there you go. So that's how prepared I am.
So it's about 7,000 feet. It's a bit bigger than 2,000 feet.
Okay, so yeah, 2,000 meters, there we go. So it's the lowest of the passes that you can reasonably pass by foot, but it is, yeah, it's 2,000 meters. And that is... I forget why they used it. I mean, the route is wailed. It was first recorded in 990 by some archbishop bloke, and they used to go from Canterbury, because Archbishop of Canterbury, and they would go down to Rome to see the Pope to get, I can't remember what it's called, but it's kind of like a piece of material sort of that you'd put around your robe that says that you're like super duper extra religious. It's like, you know, having an MA instead of just a degree. It's like the religious version of that. And this, that's the route that they would use. And so the route takes you that way. So I was like, well, it takes me that way. I'm going to go that way. So the last town in Italy that I'll be at is Aosta. It's called Aosta. And then I'll go up. And then when I pop down the other side, I'll be on Lake Lausanne. I think it's pronounced Lausanne. It's Switzerland.
Lausanne,
yeah. Yeah, Lausanne. And it's... When I originally planned the route, I was trying to fit it around what would fit, what would be most convenient with my work schedule. So later in the year was better. So between October and April, it's a little bit kind of lighter load at work. So I was like, right, I'll set off.
It's like also a little bit more snowy in the Alps.
Exactly. So I was going to do October 18th was my date, and I was going to get home for Christmas. And then I would have these, like, as I was falling to sleep, I'd get these sudden flashing images through my mind. It was like, running, squashed under an avalanche, freezing to death. And it just happened, and I'd like suddenly shake awake and be like, I'm going to get squashed in an avalanche, squashed in an avalanche, squashed in an avalanche. But I still wasn't addressing the fact that maybe I should go earlier in the year. I was like, no, because I'm sure it won't snow, because I don't want it to. And that's fine, right?
I'm not sure that's how it works.
No?
No. I love your optimism, but I'm not quite sure that's exactly right. How it works.
So someone managed to convince me that that's not how it works.
Oh, good.
And
good.
Someone at Project Awesome, obviously, my life is Project Awesome. So I moved the whole thing to September. So it should be, I'll be about 3 weeks to a month through Italy. Again, just depending on how long it takes, how kind of slowly I do it. And I'll be through the Alps mid-October. I say mid-October at the latest, because I think the longest it will take me is a month through Italy. It's more like to be 3 weeks. But even if it takes me a month, I'll be through the Alps on October 12th. And last year, just gone, the snow started on something like November 20th. So I'm still a month before last year's first snow. So I'm remaining optimistic. I mean, you know, if it just does snow, then I'll just snake around the coast. I'll just stay on the coast, and then I'll just have a longer route going back up through France. It's not the end of the world.
Well, the beauty of having an extra 6 weeks before Christmas is you could still make it home for Christmas.
Exactly. So I think if nothing goes wrong and there isn't snow and I don't get squashed in an avalanche, I'll be home like end of November.
Do you know what comes next? Is there a plan for the next adventure, or are you solely focusing on this project?
So I'd say in terms of what my kind of fears or what my worries are, the run itself, I'm full of excitement. The return, I'm full of trepidation. Because I'm very aware that you know, how can you come off something like that and go back to your 9 to 5, put your phone in your bag, get on the tube, whatever. How can things be normal after that? How can you fit back into the mold after that? I just, my adjustment back is one of the things that I do worry about, because there's kind of a history of mental illness in my family. My mother has bipolar, and I've never struggled with it, but I have struggled with some things, and I have seen a therapist before and all the rest of it. So I am quite self-aware, and I'm very self-aware of what the return is that I'm going to struggle with the return, I think. So I think because of that, I'm kind of starting out on the best way possible, in that I'm aware it's going to happen, so I'm going to equip myself. Yeah, but my return, I would like my return to be full of like, where should I next run home from? Because also it needs to rhyme, obviously, running home from Rome. So where are the other places in the world that rhyme with home? Because otherwise the whole thing doesn't fit. It's all about the rhyme. It's not about the enjoyment. It's about the rhyming. You need to have a tagline. So I'd like to think that I'm going to come back and be like, where next, where next, where next? And I kind of sort of toying with the idea. I lived in Namibia when I was 18. And there's a little town called Luderich, which I loved. I kind of toying with the idea of wanting home from there, but that would be like years, you know, that's the bottom of Africa. I'd like to think I'm going to come back and be like, yeah, let's just plan. Let's do it. Let's love it. Let's write a book. I'd love to write a book. I want to be a writer anyway. I'd love to write a book about it, blah, blah, blah. And a part of me is like, you're going to come back and you're going to go tuck yourself into a little ball, and you're going to be like, everything in life is definitely going to be rubbish now, because how can anything be good after something so amazing?
Yeah, you do that for about a couple of days, and then you plan something else. Let me warn you though that writing a book is not as easy as you think it is. You probably don't even think it is easy. But
no, I write a fair amount in different places, but it's writing is what I've always wanted to do. But also writing a book about a long distance journey is like what? Like the a million people have already done it. So if nothing that unusual happens on my journey, then I don't know whether I'll write a book because like everyone's written a book about a long journey they've been on. So I think the market is although it's an unusual thing to do, it's one of the bog standard things to come back and write a book about it, right?
Yes and no. Okay, I think I'm writing my book predominantly for me.
Okay.
And predominantly so that when I'm 60, I can show my kids.
Of course, yeah.
Because
there's
no way I'll have grandkids by that stage. But when I'm 60, I can show my kids, this is what your dad did.
Yeah. Amazing.
When he was young or younger. Yeah, it's not necessarily for other people. Okay. Obviously, there's a very important message in why I did what I did, and I'm writing my book to try and promote that message as well. And that brings me on nicely to talking about Adam. Tell us who Adam is, and tell us why you're doing Home from Rome for him.
So Adam Finch is a fantastic little boy. So Dave, there's a guy called Dave Finch, and he's been coming to Project Awesome. I think he didn't come that many weeks after I first started coming. So around the same time we kind of started, when it was still very new, very, very embryonic. There was like 8 people when I first went. Leo McCarron was one of those. Tom Allen was another one. And I think it was still just kind of small. It was probably only just into double figures by the time Dave was coming. So I've kind of known him through Project Awesome for ages. And he's just one of those, he's just a really great guy. Like someone need somewhere to stay, he'll be like, well, come and stay in my flat, you know, how long, 2-3 weeks, whatever, it doesn't matter. If you are struggling with something, or so Danny, who set up Project Awesome, went on this thing on TV called Ultimate Hell Week, and while he was away, one of the people who comes to Project Awesome unfortunately was knocked off her bike and killed. And because we didn't want Danny to come out of this program that he'd been on, no Facebook contact or anything, go on his phone and see it, we didn't want him to find out that way because it would be awful. So Dave was like, no worries, I'll go and get him. And he drives up to Wales to meet Danny so that he can give him the news properly himself before he finds out this really horrible way via social media, his first way of knowing, you know. And then drives him back to London. And he just does that. If someone, there was a guy called Adam who ran, not the same Adam, who ran 15 marathons in 2015. And Dave would be alongside him running his marathons with him, like he did. The big finale was the one in Athens, the marathon. Dave went out and did that with him as well. He's just one of these really great blokes who he just squirrels away in life doing good deeds and just being awesome, just being a great friend, a great guy. And he's brought his 2 kids, so Dave and Megan, sorry, Adam and Megan, he's brought them along to Project Awesome before, and they're both great kids. And then Adam, they found that he had a brain tumour. And so the tumour was removed just before last November. But when it was removed, they found that it was malignant. And so he now has brain cancer, not anymore. The brain cancer is not there anymore. So they had to treat it, obviously. So he's spending like a year in hospital. He's 9 years old, spending a year in hospital, getting treated for brain cancer. And he has these really kind of aggressive treatments for like chemotherapy and radiotherapy. And it's just, you know, he's 9. It's tough. It's hard for him. And so Dave, and that's in Manchester, so he's getting treated in a children's hospital in Manchester. So Dave comes down here. He actually is one of the people that now runs Project Awesome because Danny's stepped down from leading it, though he's still very involved, so he doesn't lead the sessions. And so Dave is one of the people that runs it. So he's down here Monday to Wednesday. He works those 3 days, runs Project Awesome, and then on a Wednesday evening, he goes up, or Thursday evening, can't remember, goes up to Manchester and works from home, but obviously from up there for the remaining days of the week, and stays up there with Adam so he can be there with him 4 days of the week. So he technically lives in London, but he spends 4 days in Manchester every week. And so if in terms of staying somewhere, he just had to pay for accommodation, or you know, put 2 chairs together next to Adam's bed in the cubicle and just sleep on chairs for 4 days, it just wouldn't be sustainable long term, like financially and also just physically on his body. He wouldn't be able to keep up his work and all the rest of it. He wouldn't have a place to cook, he'd have to eat out all the time. And I have these really great things called Ronald McDonald Houses, which by coincidence, when I was younger, I had an operation on my hip. My parents stayed in one in Liverpool. So Dave stays in one of these, which is connected to the hospital in Manchester, and it's free. And there's always milk in the fridge, bread in the oven. Each family has a little kitchen unit that is their own. The room where they can stay is, you know, has like a living room bit and whatever. So he can work, he can sleep properly, he can cook. And that's just like an absolute godsend, because more than half of his time is spent with Adam. So if more than half of his time was spent paying for meals out all the time, paying for hotels to stay in all the time, it's just basically not doable. And so they give him free accommodation, space where he can work and sleep, all the rest of it. And so I was like, oh, I'm gonna do this big run thing, it's all very exciting. And I saw Dave at Project Awesome, and I just had one of those like serendipitous moments where I was like, this can fit together somehow. I can do something about this. I don't know what. Like, I can't pretend that I thought up the run for Adam. That would be disingenuous of me. I was going to do the run anyway, but I was like, why not use it? I mean, it's primarily still for me to see what will happen, to see whether I will get squashed under an avalanche, but why not do something? Why not raise awareness of the fantastic work they do? And I know the fantastic work they do because my parents stayed in one. And as a 10-year-old, I think if you can say that you can have depression as a 10-year-old, I think I did have that. It was a horrible time in my life. Very black zone. Where I actually don't like to revisit that time in my mind very often because it kind of makes me even a bit tearful just thinking about it. You can hear my voice going. So it was just horrible. Just a horrible time. And the Ronald McDonald House housed my parents. And if they hadn't been there, I just wouldn't have really got through that time.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have those facilities because there's so much going on in families when a child is sick, that having to worry about where you're staying and paying for that is a huge drain financially on families. So to be able to do that is phenomenal. And I suppose you set yourself the target of raising £1 for every mile on your trip, which is just 1,249 miles.
Yeah, I didn't want to overset it because I didn't want to feel like I'd failed anyone.
Yeah, but you've already smashed that target so much so that you've reset your target to £2 per mile.
And I'm getting close to that as well.
Yeah, so, and you haven't even started yet, which is pretty amazing. So as this builds and builds and builds, I think you're going to absolutely smash that target as well, and you'll be coming back to reset it for £5 per mile or something of that order.
Yeah,
But it's absolutely phenomenal. The charity you've picked is obviously very close to your own heart, as listeners can tell from your voice over the last few minutes. And I think it's fantastic that you've taken this opportunity to help one of your friends and their children in a time when really it's needed in so many families across Ireland and the UK and every country in the world. It's a problem.
Yeah.
So congratulations. It's going to be an absolutely epic adventure. I know people are going to absolutely love listening to it and following it as they go along. Where can they keep up to date with what's happening in the build-up to and actually when you're on the road?
Okay, so the Running Home from Rome tagline that I was loving because it's so rhymey, that if you put that in to anything, just run it in as one word, Running Home from Rome. It's on Instagram as that. It's on Facebook as that as well. And then on Twitter, because it wouldn't let me have it, like how annoying, it's the initials of that. So it's RHFR and then the number 99. Because also the thing is with that, if you were to text 70070 with those initials and the number 99 and then put an amount like £5, that is how you donate as well. So you text 70070 with the message RHFR99. £5 or £10 or all your life savings, your choice, and that's how you donate as well. So the Twitter thing, not let me have the name, that was annoying. It ties into how you donate, and but just Google it. Just Google Running Home from Rome as one word, and it will come up. So I write a bit for Huffington Post, and so it will probably reference the stuff on Huffington Post as well. I also write for a website called Etch Rock, just ETCH Rock, all one word. I write for them about the run as well. I've just started writing for a really great website called Love Her Wild, which is female adventurers and just kind of talking about, I don't know, just the kind of quite singular category that female solo female adventuring kind of is, sort of, because there's a lot of different elements in that than there are in solo male adventuring, although that also brings its own kind of, you know, specifications. So it's about that, and I'm doing a series of blog posts for them about the wives of the female adventurer and looking into kind of female adventurers from the past and how they've kind of blazed a trail for the female adventure scene as we now see it. So yeah, if you put my name, if you put Running Home from Rome, all of that stuff will come up. I'm kind of all over the place, all in your Google feed.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I'm sure it's popped up all over the place for me over the last few months, and I'm sure it will continue to do so. If you had one ask of the listeners to this podcast to support what you're doing, what would it be?
Just go for a run. I dare you. Just go out for a run and see what happens. Just see. It doesn't matter if you've never been for a run before or if you always go for a run. Just go for a run. See where it starts.
Love it. Simple, easy. Get a pair of runners and just go and start. Yeah. Love that idea. And also delighted. I like it that most people who are on this show don't answer with something that benefits them, which is really, really nice. Laura, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you for the last 50 minutes or so. And looking forward to seeing what the response is to this. If people want to get in touch with you, they can, as you mentioned, to look up Running Home from Rome, all one word, on Facebook, on Instagram, on the Google machine. It's all over the
and
place.
Please do. I really love hearing from people who are like, I'm doing something vaguely similar. I don't really know what I'm doing. And I'm like, well, neither do I, but let's talk. Like, I love people getting in touch about the one. It's not, I'm definitely not kind of like so inundated with popularity, I think that's true, that I don't want to hear from normal everyday people who are also just been for my first run. I feel like I'm going to die, whatever. I love hearing from people, you know?
Absolutely. Well, listen, as I said, that's where you can find you on the interwebs. And it's been absolutely awesome to have you on the show
being here.
This week. Thank you very much for taking the time
to talk to us. No problem. I'll see you later.